Hi, welcome back to Dev Radio. My guest today is Todd Gardner. Todd, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. What do you do?
Oh, so many things. I started a company called Track.js along with a couple of other friends of mine. And what we do is we provide a service that does JavaScript error tracking for modern web applications.
JavaScript error tracking. So are you tracking errors in other people's JavaScript, or are you writing JavaScript to track errors?
We wrote some JavaScript that our customers will put into their page, and we'll track errors coming out of their applications. JavaScript is a really complex language, and oftentimes we're deploying our applications, these ones that are getting more and more complex, into browsers that we can't always test against, we can't always control. We don't even know if the users install maybe the Ask toolbar in their browser and it blows something up. And so those errors can just come out from areas where we weren't expecting them. So Java, or what Track.js does is we record the errors that happen inside your end user's web browsers and package that up with a bunch of other what we call telemetry information, stuff that the user was clicking on, stuff that the network was doing, stuff that was happening in your application to let you recreate the steps that took a user down a bad path that led to an error.
Interesting. So this is after I've deployed an application, it's in production, then there's something that's running this basically, it's an extra error handler that's logging information
exactly
about the environment.
Exactly. So you include our script with your application, and it's for monitoring in production. So we'll be listening as your users are interacting with your application, but rather than think like Google Analytics. Google Analytics is recording things about what the user's clicking on and funneling it to the marketing group so that they can improve the application. We're doing things that are kind of similar. We're recording how the user's interacting with the app. We're recording that for the purpose of bringing it back to the developers and the support group to understand how did a user end up in a bad situation where an error happened.
That's interesting. So the user interaction, of course, happens out on the client, which could be half a world away from where the developer is sitting. How does that information get back to the developer?
So the data is recorded in the end customer's browser by our script, and we're doing an in-memory recording happening there. When what we call an exceptional event happens, something that we believe the developers would want to know about, that information is transmitted back to Track.js, and our service is hosted in Microsoft Azure. Package that up, do a bunch of analytics about it, and present a dashboard back to the developers and say, hey, here's what's going on in your application. Here's what's interesting. Here's probably what you should be looking at.
Ah, interesting. And you're implementing this entirely as a JavaScript that developers can just include in the top of their files?
So the customer interfacing part of it is a JavaScript that you include as part of your package. And then our backend is written in C#. And it does a bunch of data crunching, and our UI is written also in C# that projects our analytics about what we think the developer should focus on.
Got it. Okay, so there's really two applications. One is the JavaScript you're downloading to the client to do this recording, and of course the callback, and the other is the portal, the dashboard that you're offering to the developers as well.
Absolutely. I'd like to show that to you if I could.
I'd love to see it. Let's get down.
So this is the core of what Track.js does. This is an error that we captured from one of our current customers. And what Track.js is able to do is we're listening to all of the interesting things that we think are happening on the page leading up to it. So in this particular case, I can see that a user using Firefox 31 landed on Docalytics registration page. And when the page stood up, we printed some console messages just saying that there was already a customer session active. And we went out and fired an API call. Not we, Docalytics, their code fired this API call and came back with a console message about a second afterwards. The user inputted 16 email characters into this form. Now, we only tracked that it was email characters. We're concerned about data privacy, so we only reported that there were 16 characters and they match an email regex, and then they clicked on a button. And that was the last thing that happened before an actual error was emitted from the application. So we're able to, like, focus in here on what were the steps that took a user down a bad path and how can they recreate it. So we also were capturing some other information that was we think is relevant. All the other JavaScript libraries that were on the page at the time of the error and their versions. some general stuff like the operating system, IP address, and how big the viewport is. And I think the viewport's interesting from a responsive design angle, in that sometimes we'll have JavaScript that will run at different screen sizes. And so knowing how big the screen is at the time of the error can help us isolate it. They also provided some general information about their application. I know that it was version 14623 of their app when this error generated, so they could focus in on the code. And this customer that they were working with, we can drill in and see all of the other errors that that customer had. So we can see that this user tried several times over a couple of minutes to interact on the registration page, and it failed. Mm. So we kind of bubbled that information up to a dashboard level to give you a high-level view of what's happening. And so we take that error information and we combine it with how many hits your page is getting to give you a general score. So in this particular case, this is saying that only 6 times for every 100 hits to the application is the user running into an error. Okay. And the error rate is down 27% versus where it was at yesterday. So with a recent release of new code, they're improving their error performance. So then we've boiled up some of these some errors to the most relevant things that we think are happening, such as the top browsers. The IE10 and Chrome are the top problems for this particular customer. Here are the URLs in their application that they need to address, and the particular errors that are happening. We could drill into that and see everything that was happening. Really just looks like there's these 3 bugs happening in their application right now. So they can take that and focus on, these are things that real customers are running into. E is not a function is probably the most prevalent one, and figure out what browsers, what operating systems are affected by it, and then use that telemetry timeline that we gave them to recreate those errors.
Interesting. So you're recording a lot of information here. Is there a performance hit when you install this?
So there's 2 levels of things that we can do with TrackJS. When you just put us on your page, which is really as simple as adding this particular script tag to your site, there's very little performance impact. We're wrapping a bunch of base-level browser functions to listen in on console log, user clicks, and AJAX events. And so there is a slight performance increase as things are passing through us, but it's really not very noticeable compared to other performance killers of single-page web applications like CSS reflow and large numbers of elements. We do have a handful of things that we've recently launched that I'm pretty excited about tracking what we call deep stack traces that go across, backwards across time almost, to tell you how functions came to be bound to callbacks. I could show you some code for that if you'd like, because that's something we've recently done. But that does have some performance implications, and so you have to opt in if you want to do that. Different kinds of applications behave differently. Backbone applications tend to work really well with that feature, and Angular applications tend to have some performance issues with it.
Interesting. Why is that, Ido?
It has to do with how those frameworks bind to click events. Backbone binds to a single click event at the top level. It listens at document and then tries to understand where was the click actually happening. And Angular attaches a lot of click events. It depends on how your application was built in it. But with how we track those deep stack traces, it can be quite noisy with Angular applications that have a lot going on.
And you said we could see some of the JavaScript you've written to capture some of these events?
Sure. I can show you that right now. So this is some prototype code that I put together for how we were going to handle this deep stack trace. And the problem with JavaScript and the problem we were trying to address is that so often the functions that generate an error are a callback. It's a response to an AJAX event finishing or the user doing something. And when those functions blow up, the stack trace is really short and meaningless. It's saying, hey, your onClick function failed. But what we wanted to know was like, what bound that onClick function? Where was that onClick function attached to that event and where did that come from? So this is some code that we wrote to try and do that. And how we do this is with something that I like to call duck punching. It's more likely called monkey patching, but I prefer to call it duck punching because JavaScript is a duck-type language. So Here we have the element prototype add event listener, which is the base level thing of how do we listen to things on the element? How do we listen to inputs or clicks? And in this case, I'm going to capture a copy of the original one, and then I'm going to redefine add event listener to do this new thing that I want it to do. And how I want to redefine it is simply based on calling it. I'm going to throw an error and immediately catch it. And the reason I want to do this is I want to grab a stack trace. I want to grab a stack trace at the time that a user is adding an event. And I'm just going to save it off. And then I also just want to know the time. So then I call through to the original add event listener. I'm actually going to interface with the browser. I want to bind up to this event. And I'm going to try to execute the callback that was passed in. If for whatever reason that fails, I can catch an error that comes out of it. And I have its stack trace. But then I can combine that stack trace with this other asynchronous stack trace that I captured earlier. I can reformat it as I'm doing here in this example here, where I just say, hey, there was a boundary here. It lasted so many milliseconds between the time it was bound and the time it happened. So with this little block of code here, what I'm able to do is I'm able to generate multiple stack traces, a stack trace based on what died just now as a result of this callback, but also a stack trace of how that callback came to be bound up to the event, and which gives you a whole lot more context, which if I can show you the UI, I can show you exactly what this looks like. So what this looks like in our actual implementation is, here's a stack trace that we actually captured, and it doesn't actually show us that much about what's going on. Something about this get style died, but I can't really see anything in the original stack trace that shows me what's going on. But with that, that deeper stack trace, what I was able to tell is that 13 seconds before, this stack was attached as a callback by this other stack, which includes bind click handler and initialize. So now we can dig back through the code and we can see exactly where in the code was this function attached and figure out that hierarchy, which I think is really valuable, and I think it's really cool that we just launched this.
Very nice. How are you handling the callbacks or the AJAX calls back to your servers in order to push this into a database? Is there a timer that appears like it does that, or is that in response to an event as well?
That's in response to an event. So our listener is running all the time, but we don't want to capture every click event, every AJAX event, just because we're not trying to be an analytics company. Right now we have a rolling log of the last 30 things that have happened. And then if what we call an exceptional event happens, which can be an uncaught error, an AJAX resorting from a 400 or greater, or somebody calling console.error, then we package up the error, we package up a bunch of information about the state of the browser, and we include the last 30 events from the timeline, and we send that all back to our server. And we're just doing a simple post request back to our server using the cores headers. That creates a restriction on our app because we only work IE8 and above. IE7 and below, we still function. Our stuff will still be on the page, but errors don't get recorded. They don't get sent back to our server. But it prevents, it doesn't break the page.
I see. Can we talk a little about the technology stack you're using? We've seen the JavaScript. You mentioned earlier that the portal is written in C#, and so I'm assuming this is ASP.NET as well. In fact, it looks like it's MVC, judging by the URL. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, we're running on ASP MVC 4, I believe, and we're hosting in Azure. Our data persistence, we're actually putting our stuff in Elasticsearch right now. Which has worked out very well for us.
I'm not familiar with that. Is that a NoSQL database?
Yeah, well, they don't really market themselves as a data store, but it's a document-based storage system, and it's really good for searching. It's based under the covers on Lucene, and so you stick documents in there, and you can do all kinds of very interesting queries about those and groupings and aggregates. But over time, we found that it's a perfectly functional storage system as well. And so we've slowly migrated to it really being the place where we are keeping our errors today.
Interesting. And are you hosting this yourself?
No, we're hosting this in Azure. The Elasticsearch, I believe Azure just introduced a search service that we're looking into right now. But right now, we just have our own cluster that we're maintaining out in Azure's virtual machines.
What brought you to Azure as opposed to self-hosting or going with a web hosting provider?
Well, so before we started TrackJS, my partners and I, we're all independent consultants, and we all worked in the Microsoft stack, so we're pretty familiar with it. And when you're starting up, it's an important question for us to address on, are we trying to learn a new tech stack, or are we trying to get something done? So we decided that we wanted to get something done. We felt TrackJS was important. We built it, started building it in the technology stack we knew at the time. So we built it in ASP MVC 3 at the time, and it was sitting on top of a SQL server. And it just made sense to put that in Azure. We were using the rest of the Microsoft stack. We just wanted to work with that. It's over time we've iterated and we've moved away from SQL Server for various other reasons. But Microsoft has been incredibly supportive. We joined the Microsoft BizSpark program, which allowed our startup to go quite quickly with other Microsoft tools at the beginning. And it's just generally been great for us.
Oh, are you still in the BizSpark program, or have you kind of graduated from there?
No. The BizSpark program, I believe, runs for a number of months more for us.
It goes three years. So.
Yes. We are only 18 months old. And not all of that were even in BizSpark. Some of that was just, you know, hand-waving and bad code that we were throwing around phases. We've only really been in full-on production where you can sign up for our service since January.
So this is a commercial product then, right?
Yeah, it's a commercial product. It's a monthly subscription service because we need to pay for the resources we use on Azure. And personally, we're all trying to work our way out of consulting. And so this is our avenue to get out of consulting. It's a monthly subscription service, and we bill based on the number of hits your application has. So the busier your application is, the more you would need to pay TrackJS to protect the customers that are hitting it. And we've been frequently asked why we don't bill based on errors. Like the real cost to us happens when an error happens, because that's when storage happens. But that's not really the value, because I want my customers to have zero errors. And I want to help them get to zero errors. And when I help them get to zero errors, I want to keep growing with them. I don't want to lose them as a customer because they don't need to pay me anymore. I want to grow with them. I want to help them build a better website. And if they have a mistake, if a bug makes it into production, I need to be ready to help catch it and help them debug it.
Tell me a little more about BizSpark, because I'm part of my job is to get people spread the word about BizSpark, and I'm always surprised by how many people just don't know about it. What are the advantages that you took from that?
I'm not surprised. I've talked to a lot of other startup founders, and a lot of people don't know about BizSpark, and I'm not entirely sure why. BizSpark has been, we learned about BizSpark actually through the Microsoft evangelist in the Minneapolis area, who came up to us at an event and said, "Hey, you should look into this." And as we learned more and more, it seemed all upsides. Like we got so much support from Microsoft in terms of tooling. It helped us, you know, drop our costs off at the beginning. Helped us get started on Azure. Really plugged us into a bunch of people who we wouldn't normally have been able to talk with because we were part of BizSpark.
Oh, like whom?
Well, early on, we knew when we were first moving to Elasticsearch, and we reached out, we're trying to figure out if there was a way that we wouldn't have to host our own Elasticsearch. And so we were just frantically firing emails at people saying, "Hey, Microsoft's moving in these different directions. Are you guys going to launch a Elasticsearch service that we could just plug into?" And we didn't get a for sure answer. But what was amazing was that we would write emails to Scott Hanselman and Scott Guthrie, and they wrote us back. They couldn't tell us the answer, but they read our email and they responded to us, and that was just amazing to us.
There's a lot of good Scots in this company. that's great. That's a great success story from BizSpark. I'm really glad to hear you guys are doing well. How's business so far?
Business is good. We just crossed recently, let's see, we crossed over 100 paying customers and we're profitable. We're still growing. I've been told that it takes about the same amount of time to go from 0 to 100 as it takes to go from 100 to 1,000. So that's what we're hoping to
get.
That's
encouraging.
There might be
some customers watching this right now. How do they find out about your product and how do they sign up?
So at trackjs.com, you can sign up for a free demo. We offer a 30-day trial, which is really, really long. You can install and hopefully fix a ton of bugs in those first 30 days. And hopefully we can prove ourselves indispensable for you. And you just sign up and keep going with us.
Awesome. Is there anything we haven't talked about that we should have?
Well, we could talk about NotepadConf.
About NotepadConf? just give me a quick pitch. What is that?
All right, so about 2 weeks ago on the internet, I'd started this little thing called NotepadConf, which is notepadconf.com, which is a conference for Notepad users, indirectly sponsored by TrackJS, and it's just a little fun thing that we're going to do in Minneapolis in November. I got a bunch of the Notepad luminaries to offer suggestions for talks, and we're going to host it at probably a local brew pub in the Minneapolis area in November.
Is this a serious thing, or are you guys just to go to a brew pub?
Define serious.
What will I learn something at this conference?
I'm sure you'll learn something.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to look at notepadconf.com, and then I'll make my travel plans based on what I see there.
That sounds good. Sounds good. We'd love to have you want to come out and do a talk.
All right. Thanks a lot, Todd. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thanks for your time and having me on the show.
This has been another episode of Dev Radio. Thanks for watching.